Echo Zoe Radio. I'm your host, Andy Olson, proprietor of EchoZoe.com. Thanks for joining me for this episode number 13 for May 2009. This month my guest is Carl Johnson. Carl's the assistant pastor of Twin City Fellowship Church in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. So the topic this month is moral relativism. Well, welcome, Carl. Nice to have you here.
Well, thanks, Andy. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So today we're talking about moral relativism.
Yes. A real problem in our society today, as you can imagine. Certainly, we see relativism being portrayed in society all around us, and certainly those that live in our culture, being in a postmodern culture, by and large, we see that type of relativistic type of attitude taking place here in our society.
Well, let's start most basic. I'm sure most people know what this is, but just in case somebody might be wondering, what do we mean? What is moral relativism?
Sure. Yeah, no, that's a great question. Well, we obviously know, well, hopefully we know what morals are, right? It's determining between right and what's wrong. And something that is relative then depends upon the situation at hand. And so someone who is a moral relativist, they will have their morals based upon whatever they believe is best for them. It's basically what's best for me, and I'll do my thing, you do your thing. And it really boils down to individuals determining for themselves what they believe should be right and what is wrong. And so there doesn't appear in the picture at all any type of absolute moral objective truth. In other words, they become the arbitrator for truth. They're the ones who determine what is right, what's wrong. And oftentimes, in fact, maybe you even heard yourself, people say, well, you know, that's it's right for me. Maybe it's not right for you. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they'll say it's true for me but not for you, or just the vice versa. So everything that becomes very relative based upon an individual's opinion, of individual's determination, and not so much upon a standard. So that's kind of what we mean by
Very pluralistic,
very individualistic, very subjective. And that's the whole issue with a moral relativist, is that truth becomes subjective to them. It's almost like determining a preference. You know, we all have preferences for things that we like. If we desire a specific flavor of ice cream, you might like chocolate, I might like vanilla, and it's a preference. For both of us, that becomes a true thing, but it doesn't become a universal truth that applies to everybody. And so what people often do with moral relativism is that they turn this into a preference instead of into something that's objectively true, that applies not only to them, but to everyone. And that's where I think we have gone astray within society today. We have lost sight of what truth truly is, that it's something objective, not something subjective. And so we have seen this slide in our society, certainly from the 1960s to the current time. And we have entered into a very postmodern world where even determining what truth is a very difficult thing for many people. And so people kind of develop and determine truth for themselves.
And this often will fly under the cover or the banner of what society has come to believe is tolerant.
Well, you know, and that's a funny thing you should say that, because people who hold to a moral relativism, they believe they're being very tolerant.
Mm-hmm.
But as we'll discuss later, really, if you are a person who holds to moral relativism, it's impossible to be tolerant. It's one of the fatal flaws of someone who is a moral relativist, is that you can't be tolerant of someone's opinion. Why? Because the very nature of being tolerant means there has to be some way of measuring that your opinion is different from mine, that I think your opinion might be wrong, but yet I allow you to hold to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you think my opinion is wrong, but see, the moment that we do that, we are now saying that there's a standard that we have established saying you're right, I'm wrong. And mm-hmm. someone who is tolerant, that's what they will try to believe, right? But if you are a moral relativist, in essence, what is that? Well, a moral relativist basically says, well, it's something that I don't have any right to make a judgment on you. If that's your morality, that's your morality.
Mm-hmm.
So if a person truly is a moral relativist, they can't even be tolerant, because someone who's tolerant at least will, by definition, they're claiming that I disagree with you, I think you're wrong, but I tolerate your opinion anyway.
Sure, we agree to disagree.
We disagree, even though we think each other's wrong. If you're a moral relativist, you're basically saying, you know what, that's your moral. So you're as right for you as you can be. I'm right for me as I can be. And so there isn't a standard there to determine right and wrong. So that's one of the fatal flaws, I think, of moral relativism, is that they can't even be tolerant because there's no standard to be tolerant by.
So you use the word subjective. Can we talk a little bit about subjective versus objective?
Yeah, good point. I think it's important for us to understand that when it comes to truth, you actually have two kinds of truth. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean, people will obviously think, well, there's only one truth. Well, you have different kinds of truth. You have something that is subjective, and I think I touched on it before, where I said that you might like chocolate ice cream, I might like vanilla ice cream. Now, those are both true claims, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what's important is that, notice what we're not talking about. We're not talking about the ice cream itself. We're talking about our preferences.
It's an opinion.
It's an opinion. You prefer chocolate ice cream. I might prefer vanilla ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Both things are true for both of us. That's a subjective truth. Now, we come to a objective truth. What we're saying now is that the object itself has to be true. So something outside of our opinion, something that is outside of us in our conversation, now becomes true.
The sky is blue kind of thing.
The sky is blue. 2 plus 2 is 4. If you say, no, Carl, I disagree with you, I think it's 5. Okay, now we can objectively look at the component of what we're looking at here and determine if, in fact, 2 and 2 make 4, or does it make 5, or does it make 10? So objective truth is something outside of ourselves. Subjective is something in which becomes a preference. Now, the danger in our society is that our society is mixing subjective and objective truth together, and they're confusing between the two, so that they can say that they prefer this to be the case, when in reality that is the case. Again, it's not a matter of what I desire or I want or I prefer. What it really comes down to is whether this thing is true or not outside of me. That's why morality, getting back to our original topic, is important for us to determine if morality is something that's objectively true or subjectively true. Now, if it's subjectively true, then we travel in the area of moral relativism, because then it becomes true for you. What's true for you and what's true for me becomes true for me. And we really don't have a right to criticize each other because it's relative.
When you talked about confusing subjective and objective,
right,
that hit me as using the logical fallacy of equivocation.
Yes.
An example, and the most basic way of explaining the logical fallacy of equivocation is I could ask you, did you beat your wife last night? And you laugh because you think, I mean, did you get a stick out and violently attack her?
Right.
But what I meant was that you raced her home.
Exactly.
You were driving different cars. Did you beat her?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, you know, and I think that's it's good to understand those type of issues when we deal with, again, moral relativism, because it's important for us to determine that morals have to be something that is outside of ourselves. It can't be a preference, an opinion, a desire that we have. It has to be based upon a standard that applies.
Or a redefining of words in the case
or
of...
Or redefining words, right? But it has to be really defined upon a standard that we accept or that all mankinds accept, mm-hmm. and that is a standard for everybody. Because if not, then we have a problem where what's right for you is right for you, and what's right for me is right for me, and you have no right to judge me, I have no right to judge you. And oftentimes, that's the issue. I have a little story that I want to share. This past year, just before the elections, we had an individual come to our door, and he was promoting a particular party. And he came to the door, and he was trying to encourage us to support this party. Well, I was curious as far as why he was supporting this party, and I asked him what he didn't like about the other party. And he listed one item, and then he said the second item that he didn't care for was the fact that they were against same-sex marriage. And I said, oh, that's interesting. I said, so tell me, is this issue here, is this something that is morally right or wrong? Well, I think I threw him for a loop because he wasn't expecting me to go to the realm of, is this something moral or not, mm-hmm. whether it's right or wrong. And as we got into our discussion, I found that he certainly supported that position. And then he started to defend his position. And he did the very thing that those who are part of moral relativists do and part of the postmodern society also does. And what he did was to say, well, when it comes to whether this is right or wrong, I think it should be left up to the individual. And I said, oh, so then the individual determines what's right and what's wrong then. And he said, yes, absolutely. And I said, well, what if my belief as far as what's right or wrong is that, because I believe it's wrong, now I am able to take and do something that would harm you because you believe that it's right. And he says, well, no, you can't do that. That's wrong. I said, wait a minute. That's your morality. That's not my morality. My morality is that if I don't like your opinion, it'd be okay for me to, take my bat and hit you with it. So then he realized that he was stepping into a quicksand here by realizing that, yes, in fact, if an individual determines morality, then my action would be as valid as his. So then he took a step back and he thought, okay, I'm going to collect myself. He says, well, no. Society determines, the majority of society determines if, in fact, something is moral or not. And I said, oh. I said, well, then you truly believe that what Adolf Hitler did during World War II when he exterminated 6 million Jews, that was moral. He said, well, no. He said, I don't agree with that. But he said, if that was moral for them, then it was moral for them, even though I don't accept it. And I said, oh, okay, so that being a different period of time, society thought it was a right thing to do, so it was okay. He said, yes. I says, well, then let me ask you this. Let's say here and now in America, if the majority of Americans felt that it was the right thing to do to take all those who held to the gay belief of same-sex marriage, that it was okay for us to take all those, lock them up, throw away the key, and that's where we'd leave them. I said, would that be okay? Well, again, he realized he had jumped into kind of from the frying pan into the fire, because he realized that if society determines morality, and if the majority of Americans felt that the proper thing to do would be to lock up all those who held that position, then I would be right. We could do that, and he would have nothing to say about it. He couldn't oppose that because he would be opposing the very morality that society was establishing. So then he tried one more attempt at it. And he says, well, if that isn't the case, then I think what we must do is just once again do what's best for not only society but for the individual. And I said, well, you get right back to what you were talking about before. If I believe then it's okay for me to lock you up, or for society to lock you up, we can do that. And he was going from one position to another, and he was demonstrating by that without a standard, without an objective standard outside of himself, then any action that a person took within society was as valid as any other person. See, the problem with someone who is a relativist is that you don't have the right to judge someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem that he was having. The moment that I started to judge his position or bring a position contrary to his, he had no defense, because he had to at least acknowledge that if I held to something different to him, my morality was as valid as his morality. And so that's one of the fallacies that we face when we deal with someone who is a moral relativist, is that they can't deal with what really morality is, because the moment that they accept that objective truth, then they have to either admit that they're wrong, or they have to admit that there is something outside of them that determines morality. And again, these are places that they don't want to go. So it was interesting that this young man, as he tried to present his case when it came to same-sex marriage and whether it was moral or not, he went from the individual to the society, and he ultimately realized that he had no defense, and that without a morality, there is absolutely nothing that society can regard as wrong or right. And that was my opportunity, by the way, of bringing in the fact that that's the reason why we need the morality of God, because he is the external, the objective truth. And he presents his truth to us as mankind in a way that all mankind has to universally be responsible to it. So it's not just to you and not to me. Mm-hmm. But God says, for example, that it's wrong to steal. That's a universal truth. Not according to culture, not according to period of time, not according to an individual's whim, but it has to be according to this objective truth that transcends time, culture, and it's something that we all must adhere to. So it gave me an opportunity to really share with him that without God's morality, you really can't have a society that works. And then if that's true, then we're accountable to God's morality. Mm-hmm. That when we stand before him one day, as we surely will, that we have to give an accountability for the way that we conducted ourselves in our society.
That's probably what made him a moral relativist to begin with.
Well, you're right, it was, because then he made the statement, as I brought all this up, he says, well, I just want you to know that, you know, God isn't always right. And my jaw hit the ground and I said, well, tell me, how do we determine when God is right and when he's wrong? I said, what criteria do you use to determine that?
So now we need something exterior, not only to you and I, but exterior to God as well.
Exactly. So see, he was digging himself deeper into a hole, because, again, everything was subjective. It was his opinion. He didn't like the standard that God had established. And so he was saying, well, then obviously God can't be right in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment I said, well, on what grounds do you make this judgment? He had no grounds. He was relying upon his preference. Well, you know what? I don't like what God does.
Mm-hmm.
And well, because of that, God's wrong.
The scary part of that is that that is putting himself above God.
It is. Absolutely. You know, so he really was shooting himself in the foot, in essence, because he, on the one hand, acknowledged that there was a God earlier on in our conversation. In fact, he said he even grew up in a particular kind of church group, but now he's saying that, oh, but by the way, God isn't always right. Sometimes he gets it wrong when it comes to morality. But you know what? I'm not sure when that is, but I know that he gets it wrong, because he couldn't tell me on what basis that he judged, you know, God. So again, it was sad on the one hand because it reflected so much of what our society really believes and holds to. But when you push this argument to its ultimate degree, nobody can live in a world where the morals are relative. Because if you did, you'd have nothing but chaos.
Mm-hmm.
So his whole premise was really built, again, on this postmodern thinking. And, you know, it was quite obvious that the answers he was giving me were answers that he was given by someone else. And it was just being passed on. I mean, he was a young man, probably in his mid to late 20s, had gone to college, and it was probably the same type of things and arguments that he heard from his professors or from others, and he was just passing it on, realizing that if you analyze this, that it didn't hold any ground, or I should say any water whatsoever, and he really was going from, you know, the frying pan into the fire. So, but that's what moral relativism does. And I think he realized it. And finally, I was able to share with him, you know, the gospel. And I was able to use the standards that God presents for us in the Ten Commandments and asked him if he ever violated these. And as we went right down the list, he had to admit that he had.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, now this is a clear standard that God is going to hold you accountable to. And so when you stand before him, understand that you aren't going to escape the fact that he also is a just God and that he has to judge those who break his standard.
And it doesn't matter if he believes that God is right or wrong in that case. God's in charge.
That's right. You know, and again, because he had such a flawed thinking of who God is, you know, he really didn't realize, I don't think, that he was going to stand before God one day and that God is just and that he's holy and that he has to judge. As we know, Scripture says, it's appointed unto man once to die and then the judgment. And as I shared that with him, he said, well, you know, God will, in essence, he said, well, God will grade on a curve, you know, based upon, you know, the good things and bad things. And I said, well, I don't know where you get that information from, because God doesn't grade on a curve. We can't be good enough to ever merit, you know, his acceptance of us. And I said, what awaits us if we fail to come to him in the way that he desires us to come to him, there's nothing but judgment that waits. And so again, it gave me an opportunity to present the gospel to him on the one hand, but also to show him that his thinking had been flawed by being taught or understanding that morals are fluid. Because that's really what he was saying, that morals change according to a person's whim or desire or even society. And in essence, I was saying, no, that they're constant. They're as constant today as they were 1,000 years ago. And if you violate them at any point in history, you're going to be accountable to God. So he really had to deal with that. And he finally said, well, I have to leave. You know, he had heard enough. And again, he hadn't really given this much thought. I mean, I could tell from his responses that they were things that he had heard from others. And now when somebody was challenging his thinking and he realized that he had no position to fall back to, he really decided, you know what, it's time to cut my losses and run. And unfortunately, I think he left not realizing that one day he will stand accountable. And
well, at least you got the chance to share the gospel.
I did. I did. And I think that if nothing else, maybe you know, some seeds were planted, because he realized that, you know what, there has to be some objective moral truth there, because if what I believe is true, then what this man said is also true. And again, I think that's one of the problems. In fact, when it comes to moral relativism, there's actually three kinds of moral relativism that exist in our society. The first one is called society, which is relativistic. And that was one of the arguments he used. And that argument says this: society itself determines what the morals are for that society. And he was...
kind of a social contract, I think.
Well, kind of a social contract, but even more than that, where he was saying that the majority rules. So if the majority of your society determines, for example, that killing a baby in its mother's womb is permissible, then it's morally right.
Well, the interesting thing is as we record this, just in the last week, the polls are coming out to say that society is flipping now on the life issue, and now we're at the point where more than 50% are hold a pro-life view.
Yes, yes. Well, again, I think people realize the flaw in the taking of innocent life, you know. And in fact, I was just reading today, I came across the description of partial birth abortion and the gruesome details involved in that. And I'm thinking, how could anybody ever believe that this is morally acceptable? to do this to an infant that is developing within its mother's womb, I mean, it shocked me that, and this is accepted by many in our culture today as being permissible. So again, I think you're right. I think the pendulum is swinging in the other direction. And even though there are many who still hold to a pro-choice, you know, it's funny because...
that's a moral relativistic view most of the time.
Of course it is. You know, and again, it just shows that our society has been influenced by that type of thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, well, anyway, society and its relativistic views are one of the three determinations. The other one also deals with society, and it has to do with what society does. And this is kind of a different version of society that is relativistic, in the fact that each society determines their own morality. And so you can have a society in Africa that determines, for example, that they actually have tribes that when the parents reach a certain age, or as they get older and they're no longer able to contribute to society, then it is the responsibility of their children to actually put them to death.
Wow.
And so you have this obligation by the younger generation that once people no longer are able to contribute, that their lives are terminated. And yet this is something that is morally acceptable within that society. So in this view, you have different societies determine their own morality, and each one then becomes its own.
Well, forgive me for asking, but how does that then differ from the first one?
Well, the first one basically says that this is what morality says. In other words, where you have a society that is, one's kind of a descriptive and one is a prescriptive. So what society does then is really one of describing the differences among societies. Okay, that society does that. They're different than this society. Both are valid. The other one is a prescription. In other words, society is telling you what to do.
Okay, so could you say one of them is on, in its relativism, it addresses morality on an individual level, and the other on a societal level?
Well, I know both of
where
them...
Where one society is saying this is what we expect out of you, whereas the other is describing it as...
what we're telling you. So in other words, one is expecting certain things, okay, because it's just the accepted morals within the community. But the other one, more or less, is dictating to society that this must be done. There is a slight difference between the two. And as we get into it a little bit later, what we'll take a look at between those two paradigms there is that you actually have two different things happening. Because in one scenario, if it comes down to every society determining what their own morals are, then one society can never judge another society. Okay? The other one has more to do with...
Well, we see that going on a lot now.
Exactly.
In this kind of blame America.
Yes. Yes.
Idea that,
of course, in that scenario, they'll see that they are judging. So it's really not moral relativism as much as it is actually using a standard to judge America by, at least whether it's right or wrong standard, they're using a standard. But in this scenario here, basically every society does as it wants. They don't have any right to judge other societies, where then within a given society, it's being prescribed as far as how you are to accept what society says. So you go kind of like the macro down to the micro within society. And then you really get down to the mini-micro, if you want to use that term, to the individual, where he says and he determines what is right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, that tends to be the norm within our society today, is that people will make a determination based upon their own preference.
Sure.
In other words, this is right for me. Maybe it's not right for you, but you have your own belief. And again, it's all individualistic. It's all centered upon my self-interest. And, you know, it's kind of the attitude, who are you to tell me that what I'm doing is wrong? And once again, when we get down to that level, and if we really were to push morality on that level in our society and function that way, you'd have nothing but utter chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Because then everybody would do what's right in their own eyes. And and by
the
way,
familiar.
It does, doesn't it? There's some biblical references to and everyone did according to their own eyes. And we have within our society this whole idea of you know, everybody doing, you know, what's right. And because of that, you have lost, I believe, from years ago, you have lost this connection with a greater society, that even though they necessarily didn't believe in a Christian morality, it still permeated the culture, and they knew that certain things were right and certain things were wrong. That pretty much has been erased in our society today. And so basically it's whatever I feel, whatever I decide to do, whatever good for me, you know, I do. And that becomes really the prevailing thought within our culture today. So again, it affects the way that we live, and it affects the way that people treat each other. I remember once I was working with a guy, and he had mentioned during our conversation that he had stole something from somebody. And he said it in passing as if, well, that was no big thing. Why? Because I benefited from it. And I said, well, what you did was wrong. He said, yeah, but the other person doesn't know that I even did this. I took something from him. And I said, well, can you imagine if he had taken something from you? Would you be okay with that? And he says, well, no, I wouldn't be okay with that. And I said, well, let me see if I get this straight. It's okay for you to steal from him, but him not to steal from you. He kind of stood there a moment and he said, yeah, you know what? You have a point. And I couldn't believe that he hadn't thought that far ahead of himself, that it would be wrong for a person to do that to him. But the moment he did to someone else, he was perfectly fine with that. So again,
we've lost even the basics of the golden rule.
Oh my goodness, it's terrible. It's terrible. So,
well, the first thing that came to my mind when you said that was grave robbing. This, obviously the dead guy doesn't know that you've stolen his watch.
Right.
But we still consider it to be wrong to take his watch.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so, you know, in this case here, you know, he was so out of touch with reality, I believe, because he couldn't see the fact that what he was doing was wrong, even though he would accuse someone else of doing the same thing to him.
Mm-hmm.
And again, moral relativism really seeped in deeply. And but one of the, I'd like to just address some of the, there's actually seven fatal flaws of being a moral relativist. First of all, if you're a moral relativist, you can't accuse others of wrongdoing. Okay? I mean, doesn't that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
If you hold to a position that's different from someone else, in essence what you're saying, well, this is right for me, and what you believe is right for you. Getting back to my conversation with this young man, when he told me that he held this position, and I said, well, you know what? If I hold to a position that people who hold to your position I don't like, and I can take and hit them with a bat, he didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that was my morality, he couldn't argue against that, because if an individual determines morality, then mine has to be as valid as his. And he was having a problem with that, because now I was forcing something that he didn't like. So he had to retreat then to the societal relativism. Well, then when that crumbled before him, then he realized he had no place to escape to. But that's the first thing, that you can't say that someone else is wrong if you hold to moral relativism. It's just impossible. Now, the second thing that a moral relativist can't do is complain about the problem of evil. Okay? You know, think about that. You know, evil can't be real if morals are relative to something that is subjective. Right? Because again, you're making a judgment.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying that is evil. That's wrong. Well, it's not if the other individual believes that's their morality. So again, it doesn't allow us to have any standard to judge anything by. We can't call evil evil. You know, we might say, you know what? I really don't care for that, but that's just my opinion. You know, your opinion might be that you're okay with that. But we can't ever come out and say, that's wrong. Because the moment that we do that, now we're actually establishing a standard that others have to abide by. And obviously then, the whole idea of the morals of an individual go down the drain. Because you can't have an individual doing that. Another thing that we see is that someone who's moral relativist can't put blame on others or accept praise. Now think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that true? Well, because again, if you don't have any external standard to measure things by, then you can't blame somebody for something wrong that they did, and you can't praise somebody. So that officer who caught the burglar, you can't praise him for that. Why? Because once again, you have no measure of...
Because in the burglar's mind, it was okay to do
exactly.
that.
Exactly. You have nothing to judge what that burglar did, what was wrong. So then obviously, the fact that the officer put him in jail, you know, you can't praise him for that. So again, you can't place blame, and you can't give credit or praise to someone who actually tries to correct a wrong. Again, if you're a moral relativist, you have no standard in which to make those determinations by. So mm-hmm. again, you can see how things start to break down when an individual holds to moral relativism. It just doesn't hold together. What's another area? Well, a moral relativist can't charge someone being unfair or unjust. You know, think about that. Once again, if you hold to the fact that you alone determine what's moral, then if somebody does something that's unjust or unfair to you, you have no means of determining, well, wait a minute here, that's not fair, that's unjust.
Mm-hmm.
Again, because you have no means to make that determination. And the moment that you do, now you're saying, wait a minute here, I have a external standard that I'm
right.
measuring this by. So again, you can't charge somebody with being unfair or being unjust. Another thing that a moral relativist can't do is improve in their morality. Think about that. You and I...
You can change, you just can't...
Well, as being people who hold to what I would call moral absolutism,
mm-hmm.
we say, okay, there is absolute morals here that we can hold to. Now, if you and I fall short of that, we can at least... aim towards improving our morals in that area, right?
Mm-hmm.
Someone who holds to a relativistic type of view, there's nothing to aim at. Why? Because there is no standard of right or wrong outside of themselves. So within a society, you can't say, well, you need to improve in your morals because they really need improvement.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you have no right to make those determinations. So there's never an ability to challenge someone else that they need to change in their morals.
Yeah, every traditional religious view in the world would take exception to that.
Yes.
Not just Judeo-Christian ethics, but also, you know, like a Hinduistic ethic or a Buddhist ethic that says we have, rather than, we'll talk about the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no heaven and hell. There's karma. And there's reincarnation, and
right.
and or the Buddhist idea of enlightenment
right.
and pushing towards some kind of super being. There's no standard to which to achieve to.
That's right. That's right. You know, and unfortunately, then within any given society, if you hold to a moral relativistic type of view, you really have a situation where you can't ever challenge somebody to make improvements. You know, so, you know, if you had morals that were below what I thought were acceptable, I could never challenge you and say, you know, this is something that you need to really improve on. Again,
mm-hmm.
holding to a moral relativistic type of ideology, we don't have that freedom. We certainly don't have the option to make those determinations. It's simply, that's your morality, this is my morality. And we have to be willing to contend with that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so you can't make improvement in the morality of the society or even an individual because, again, you're determining your own morality.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you have to then have a standard in order to say, well, I'm not measuring up. So... another area is that a relativist can't hold meaningful moral discussions. You know, think about that. You can't get together and determine, well, this situation here is a situation where morality needs to be such and such. And you can't have an interaction because, again, if my morality is one way and your morality is another way, how can we ever interact to determine that, no, there needs to be a morality that we all hold to? It's meaningless, right? So, once again, any type of discussion like that would be absolutely meaningless for individuals who hold to a relativistic type of idea. And then lastly, a moral relativist cannot promote the obligation of tolerance.
That's one we mentioned at the beginning.
That's one that we mentioned in the beginning. Why? Because tolerance means that you tolerate, even though you disagree with someone else's position. And, you know, in this case here, if there's no objective moral rules, then there's no rule that requires tolerance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So once again, outside of something that's objective, where we have morals that we can go to and say, yes, this is the measure of morality, then once again, there's no obligation for us to be tolerant of one another. And certainly it's something that we can't expect of others. Because once again, why be tolerant? There's nothing to be tolerant of if, in fact, each person determines their own morals. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things that are fatal in the thinking and actually the ideology of one who holds to a moral relativism. And as we think about our society, we really can't function as a society if, in fact, everybody did what was good in their own eyes, right? Mm-hmm. We'd have nothing but chaos. And we'd have, by the way, then no way of judging if someone is doing something right or wrong. Think about our law. You know, maybe you've heard this terminology. Someone says, well, you can't legislate morality, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've heard people tell me that. And I say, well, no, you're absolutely wrong. That's the only thing that we can legislate is the way people act, by establishing laws. That's what laws are. It says that, no, you can't drive faster than 55 miles an hour. If you do, it's against the law. Well, what they're saying is that if you break that 55-mile barrier, you have broken the law. If it says that it's wrong for me to take and to steal from you, society, then I, as an individual, am breaking the law. So once again, this idea that we can't legislate morality is completely fatal in its thinking, mm-hmm. because it's the very laws that we have that protect ourselves from complete chaos in our society. So ultimately, it comes down to this. If we don't have absolute morals, something outside ourselves that we can go to make determination, then society ultimately will break down into nothing but chaos. And even though people would like to believe that they can determine their own morality, nobody lives by that. I mean, the moment that somebody says, well, sure, we can live by that, first thing that you do is steal something in which they have and see how they react.
Mm-hmm.
Their reaction will tell you a lot more about what they really believe than what they say, right?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I once heard a teacher who was teaching values clarification, which is really another extension of this whole idea of moral relativism. And she was teaching the class that depending upon situations is how you really take and determine your morals.
Well, I wanted to maybe mention at the beginning,
okay. That
this would be a good time to do it. Another name for moral relativism would be situational ethics.
Correct. And that has played a huge part in education in America today. And as I was mentioning in this situation that actually happened where the teacher was teaching situational ethics, the message was well received by the students. And so it came the day of the big test. And the students decided, they got together and they decided, you know what? We're going to share each other's answers on this test. And so they told the teacher that. Why? Because the situation, in their eyes, allowed for them to pool their knowledge together in order to get the right answers, in order to get a better grade on the paper, right? That was their ultimate objective, was to get a better grade on the paper. And so when they presented the idea to the teacher was, she was shocked. She said, well, no, you can't do that. Well, see, the students were following through on exactly what they were being taught. But the moment that they put it into reality, the teacher said no. And she says, well, you know what? As long as this is my classroom, you're going to go by my morals. Well, now she was teaching them
objective,
that there was an objective morality,
mm-hmm.
right? So she was defying the very thing that she had been teaching them for weeks on end. And so when you really come and push comes to shove, a moral relativist really can't stand on his own, because the moment that you push them to the nth degree, they will have to admit that their idea of morality falls all apart and that you need something that's outside of themselves. Mm-hmm. And so, by the way, that's where the whole area of faith and religion come into practice. Now, I'm not saying any faith, I'm not saying any religion, I'm saying that of the God of creation, mm-hmm. the one that we read in God's holy word, the scriptures, because he is the one who has given us his morality. So now he has given us a standard that all humans must go by. And we have a standard that we can judge actions then outside of ourselves. And so we can determine, by the way, that when the burglar steals from someone, that that's wrong. Then we can take and arrest him. We can incarcerate him because what his actions were in opposition to the morals that society had established based upon the morals that God gave to society. And so when we look at what God has given man, we realize that this is a standard that then allows man to function the best within society.
Mm-hmm. And he's so, not only written that on in his word, in his scriptures, he's written it on our conscience.
Yeah, great point, Andy. He actually has done that. And we know, by the way, right? Mm-hmm. We know when we've done something wrong. Our conscience bothers us. Unless we have so hardened our conscience that those things no longer bother us. You know, you're right. He has written his morals on our conscience and on our heart. And so when we do something wrong, we are, you know, we have that tinge of guilt and shame there. Mm-hmm. Why? Because he has given us a standard. But what our society is trying to do is to try to minimize and try to sear our consciences by saying, you know what, don't listen to this idea that God has given us morals to live by. You know what, you be your own God, in essence, and you live the way that you want to live. But you know what, when society functions in that manner, society never functions right. You always have major problems. You always have conflict. And when everything is said at the end of the day, it brings nothing but chaos and disharmony to any society. When we live according to the morals of God's law, you always have harmony, if everyone is observing it. Mm-hmm. And if not, then at least you have a standard, a measure in which to gauge other people's action. And so, you know, if we think that God has given this to man, who better than God who made us knows the best way that we should function and operate between ourselves and also between man and himself. And so, again, moral relativism has no place in our society. If you actually practice it to its final conclusion, it'll make nothing but chaos and disaster with any society and any life, by the way. Anybody who tries to live that way, their life will always be ruined. But on the other hand, if you have God's morals in place as a standard, and if you have society and individuals living by that standard, you'll always have harmony. You'll always have the way that man was intended to live with each other. So again, the question is, how should we live? The question is, do we live according to our own desires and wants, which, by the way, we know if we are sinful human beings, we're always going to be led by those sinful desires, which will many times, oftentimes, be in direct conflict with someone else's desires, correct? Mm-hmm. So that's where we need God's morals to come in, because it allows us then to abide by the very way that God wants us to live. So I think the bottom line here is moral relativism brings nothing but disaster to a nation. And we're seeing that happening in our own country today. And as this continues to deteriorate, as I believe that it will, I think we're going to see more and more problems within society. The only way that we can resurrect this is by our nation turning back to the God that established us as a nation. And as we do that, as we turn to him and his word and become obedient to it, we'll start to see God's blessing rather than the consequences of our sins that are overtaking our nation today. And it really is sad, but we really do see the consequences of God's judgment upon our nation, I think, coming about today because of man's rebellion against him and his failure to live according to his morals or his law. So the bottom line here is, do we want God's way or do we want our way? If we go our way, we know it's certain that disaster will come of it. If we go God's way, we know that through him we'll truly have freedom, we'll truly have harmony, and ultimately God will be glorified in that. So once again, moral relativism leads to death, and God's absolute morals leads to life. And I don't know about you, but I do know about you, and, and you as well as myself realize and understand that God's morals are the only way to live. So, I guess that's all I have.
Okay. Well, I think this was a very interesting topic. It was, I'm glad that we did it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for inviting me and allow me to share my few thoughts with you. And
thank you for coming.
Appreciate it, Andy.
Before we close, I wanted to mention that I had to bite my tongue many, many times through this interview. I've already recorded the next interview that I'll post. This, you know, you and I are May.
Right.
I've already recorded June, and that was with Greg Kokel of Standard Reason.
Yes.
And we've already discussed many of the exact same things.
You know, Greg's a great guy, and a lot of these principles that I shared with you today actually come from one of his books that he has written called Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. Mm-hmm. And for those of you that are interested in this subject, I would encourage you to get his book by Greg Kokel, Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. And I think certainly there's a whole lot more than what I shared today, but I think you'll really get a real firm understanding of what moral relativism really is and the ways to deal with it in our society. Mm-hmm. And Greg's a great guy.
And some of what you talked about was very closely tied to what we talked about.
Oh, great.
And what you'll hear next month. So if you enjoyed this interview, you will really enjoy the one next month with Greg Kokel.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. And, Greg's a great guy.
Thank you very much for coming in.
You're welcome, Carl. Andy. Appreciate it.
It was a pleasure. And I hope we can do it again.
Yep, I agree. Yep, call me anytime. Be happy to come.
All right, thanks. Well, that wraps up this episode. As I mentioned with Carl, my guest for next month is Greg Kokel of Standard Reason. I had the chance a few weeks ago to interview Greg over the phone about his book, Tactics. Tactics is all about a game plan for sharing your Christian convictions. It was an excellent book, excellent interview. I look forward to posting it so you all can hear it. That'll be up Saturday, June 6th at EchoZoe.com. So thanks again, and until then, I'm Andy Olson. This is Echo Zoe Radio.